Morning, Your Honors. My name is Jonathan James. I represent Appellant Clark Construction in this matter. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Very well.
Thank you. This is an industrial insurance claim arising from Industrial Insurance Act case arising from a workers' compensation claim filed by Mr. Johnson for bilateral carpal tunnel syndrome arising from his work as a construction worker with Clark Construction. The reason this case is here before you today is because a Superior Court jury awarded Mr. Johnson a pension. And a workers' compensation pension is essentially lifetime payment, essentially wage replacement, but for the balance of his life.
It's Clark, a big number.
Say that again.
It's a big number.
Okay. And that aside, you know, the purpose of the act in the first place is to provide treatment for workers, right? So if an injured worker gets hurt on the job.
It's not the only purpose. It's supplanted the entire right to sue your employer, and there are elements of that claim include both the cost of care and the loss of future income.
Absolutely. Yes, there are many elements.
So, I mean, and time loss and permanent partial disability awards and pensions have been a part of the industrial insurance scheme since it was instituted.
Absolutely.
So to say its primary purpose is to provide care is simply not true.
I would just argue that the first goal is to provide that person with treatment.
What
right?
statute says that?
That's not in
the preamble. Doesn't say that, does it?
No.
And the statutes that identify what the worker can recover don't say that, do they?
No. It provides.
Do you have a case that says that?
No, Your Honor, I do not.
You just made that up, and it's contrary to what both the statute and the case law say.
Well, what I'm arguing is not that there aren't other benefits that a person is entitled to.
You said one is primary. There are people that suffer permanent disabilities that have virtually no medical expenses.
Absolutely, but the initiation.
You asked to hear that the primary benefit they're getting was their medical coverage.
The initiation of a claim starts with providing medical treatment. That is the basis for a workers' compensation claim. The person has an injury, whether it's physical or mental. They require treatment. That is what the Act sort of initially provides. All those other benefits flow from that, and I'm not denying that those aren't important benefits or they're not the primary objective of the Act, but it all starts with medical treatment. So in order to find somebody permanently and totally disabled, you have to find that they don't need any other medical treatment at all. Because the medical treatment is provided for by the Act. That's what they're supposed to be getting, in addition to all these other benefits. I don't disagree with that. So here, when the jury awarded Mr. Johnson a pension, they essentially found he doesn't need any further treatment. And if
what was the argument your client made to the jury? Was it that this is wrong because the harm has caused a condition that's not yet fixed, or instead was it the condition that's causing him all his troubles wasn't caused by his workplace injury?
It's the latter. It's that.
So why would you get to advance a different argument in front of us?
Well, because that it's sort of in the alternative, right? If the jury found that these work conditions were related, right, then they have to reach the question, are those conditions fixed and stable? Does he have any temporary total or permanent total disability resulting from those conditions, right? And so,
well, even let's present to a court that the question is, A, do you get to come to the appellate court and say they got the answer to A wrong because they should have been answering B?
I'm not sure I understand that question. I think
jury is presented with one question. The argument between counsel says, here's what we disagree about. Jury accepts one side's argument and not the other side's. The losing side comes up and says, well, we didn't argue this other issue to the jury, but we'd like you to decide that the jury should not have resolved the other question against us because this person still needs treatment.
I think all of the questions presented to the jury were premised on the threshold question, are these mental health conditions related? If they are, you have to take into consideration the acceptance and the mental health conditions under the claim when you're addressing all these other questions, whether it's time loss, further treatment, permanent total disability. I do not think that that's inconsistent with also arguing that none of these conditions are related. If you argue on the one hand this mental health, these mental health conditions aren't related, then the next argument for my client is to say, okay, then you have to affirm the Department of Labor and Industries order that says he's fixed and stable.
My point is, you can make all of those arguments to the jury, but if you don't make them all to the jury, do you get to make the ones you didn't make to the jury to this court?
I would argue that all those arguments were made to the jury. It was implicit in all of the...
If I were able to read a transcript, it doesn't seem like I am because you didn't provide a verbatim report of proceedings. If I were able to read the closing argument and see that there was no argument that Mr. Johnson needed further mental health treatment, would you be able to raise that issue on appeal?
I believe so. I think the Superior Court case was an appellate case, right? That issue was on appeal before the jury before the Superior Court.
The agency found that Mr. Johnson had presented a prima facie case, which would mean there was sufficient evidence, had they believed it, to rule in his favor, but they didn't believe it. They believed your experts.
That is correct. And it was not...
And your issue here is whether there's a prima facie case.
Well, we have two issues, same as in the Superior Court. The one issue is that my client does not believe that substantial evidence supported the verdict, that part of the verdict finding his mental health conditions related to the claim.
Prima facie case issue.
That's their first argument. The other arguments are, okay, if this court is going to accept the jury's verdict on that count, then substantial evidence still has to support the jury's award of a permanent total disability pension, time loss for that 1.5-year period, and a determination that he doesn't need any further treatment. Those are all part of the same package. I mean, this is all wrapped together in workers' compensation. You cannot separate those things out. Thank you, Your Honors.
You have your rebuttal time.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, my name is Dougal Narolik, and I represent Mr. Randy Johnson. Just to begin, Judge Leach, you brought up a very good question that I would like to go ahead and start out by addressing. You mentioned that the Board of Industrial Insurance Appeals found that Mr. Johnson had made a prima facie case. I stand on my briefing, which the Court has no doubt read, but I would like to reiterate a couple of points. I believe that much of this review is precluded by the appellant's own actions or lack thereof. Since this court reviews the board's record in the light most favorable to Mr. Johnson, it's important to point out that beginning on April 8th, 2015, the Board of Industrial Insurance Appeals issued its decision and order, which largely affirmed their proposed decision and order from December 29th, 2014. Mr. Johnson ultimately appealed part of that decision and order to the Superior Court, where a jury reversed in part and affirmed in part that decision. What's important about that fact is, indeed, part of that April 8, 2015 decision was affirmed because it was never raised or challenged by Mr. Johnson or Clark Construction. In fact, the Board did not simply affirm the proposed decision and order, but instead issued an opinion specifically to overturn the determination of the Industrial Appeals judge who said that Mr. Johnson did not make a prima facie showing. I quote,
"So is it your position that if Clark Construction wanted to challenge whether the jury had substantial evidence to support the finding of total permanent disability, it had to appeal the board's decision that your client had presented a prima facie case?"
Yes, Judge. I believe that Clark Construction had to take some sort of action to, be it cross-appeal or object at some point, to the board's determination that a prima facie case had been made. The court quoted, "We granted review because we disagree that Mr. Johnson failed to present a prima facie case of temporary and permanent total disability."
We're familiar with the board's findings. You need to read.
Judges went so far as to actually cite the evidence upon which they were basing their determination that a prima facie case had been made. referring to Joshua Webb, the ANRP that Mr. Johnson had treated with for many years, saying that he had made a prima facie case for temporary or permanent total disability. They had simply weighed the evidence in Clark Construction's favor. Put simply, the board found that Mr. Johnson had made a prima facie showing of permanent total disability. They simply weighed the facts in the employer's favor. And that determination that Mr. Johnson made a prima facie case was never challenged by Clark Construction.
And when you get to Superior Court, if you've taken an appeal from the board's decision, do you get to parse it out so you're only appealing part of it?
Well, Judge, an appellant, when you appeal a decision, you don't appeal that which does not aggrieve you. So the entire...
It's a de novo factual hearing based on the record in the Superior Court, isn't it?
It is, Judge, yes.
Okay, well, if it's de novo, how do you get to take part of it in front of the Superior Court fact finder?
Well, if it's a de novo factual review, if the judges are making a legal finding that a prima facie case has been presented, then does that not become binding if it's not challenged?
Your position is that the board made a conclusion of law that was unchallenged, and that conclusion of law, because it was unchallenged at the Superior Court, is binding on Clark Construction here as well.
That's correct, Judge, yes. In fact, and to that point, Judge, I believe that had Clark Construction wanted to, since the board actually specifically made a decision in order and made a point of saying that a prima facie case had been made, Clark Construction had the exact same time period, the exact same statute of limitations, in order to cross appeal or in some way object to Mr. Johnson having been determined to have made a prima facie showing. That began to run on April 8th, 2015, so we stand here now 2.5 years too late to bring this up. In fact, this was something that was compounded time and again by Clark Construction's own actions because they never filed a cross appeal, and they never objected at the board level to the introduction of testimony from Mr. Johnson's experts. Or at the Superior Court in giving the instruction on temporary and total disability to the jury, or in giving the special verdict form, which included temporary and total disability, to the jury. They didn't ask for summary judgment.
Do you have a case that says that the employer has to cross appeal if it's challenging a legal conclusion in an industrial insurance case?
Judge, there is a case that I did not cite in my...
Tell us the name of it now.
Hanquit versus Labor and Industries, and I can give you the citation, Judge.
Please.
It is 75WinApp657, and I believe what you're looking for is at 663 and 64. And it's Hanquet is HANQUET. And so my argument, Judge, is that essentially there is as Mr. Johnson has been determined to have made a prima facie case at the board, that the burden of proof of making a prima facie case is equal to, if not greater than, substantial evidence. Mr. Johnson was held to strict proof at the Superior Court. He proved competent and credible evidence that he was temporarily and totally disabled and permanently disabled. And again, it was never challenged. In fact, there is a case that I refer to.
When you say it was never challenged, the other side presented evidence that disputed that.
Correct. Yes, Judge, and I believe that was the burden of persuasion, or frankly, just the counter argument. What Clark Construction never did was argue that Mr. Johnson had failed to provide any evidence.
There was no halftime motion, and there was no motion for a directed verdict. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Judge. There was no JNOV or asking for a new trial or, frankly, any objection ever. And in my briefing, I actually provided some verbatim transcripts of opposing counsel going so far as to help draft on record the special verdict form. So not only was
Well, we've got a rule that Judge Dwyer mentioned to somebody in another case this morning that says that you can always challenge the sufficiency of the evidence, RAP 2.5. So what difference does it make that the other side helped draft the jury instructions?
I suppose it's just to compound the fact, Judge, that this is, frankly, saying that there is no substantial evidence has been so thoroughly waived from the outset that this, to me, feels like, to put it in sports terms, this is a first-inning issue brought in the ninth inning. This is something that...
Or it's an own goal.
Or what, Judge?
Or it's an own goal.
What?
there's either sufficient evidence or there's not. You recognize that there was or there wasn't. I mean...
Well, and Judge, Clark Construction never essentially presented the argument that that there wasn't enough evidence. They essentially proceeded by remaining silent on all counts that the evidence just weighed in their favor.
I mean, but somebody can do that, right? I mean, you can if you're defending, you can go in and let the other fellow put on his case and say nothing, and if there isn't enough evidence, in the end, when you're done with appealing, you win because there wasn't enough evidence. I mean, that's just the way things work, right? I mean, there has to be enough evidence. That's why we have the rule that says you can always raise sufficiency of the evidence, because we can't have a judgment that's not based on evidence that's sufficient. It's not weighing it. It's just there has to be evidence.
Well, and I agree with you, but I believe that there has been enough evidence to convince two board judges to specifically state as much. There was enough evidence for six fair-minded jurors to deliberate and consider and decide that, in fact, Mr. Johnson was temporarily totally disabled and permanently totally disabled.
Yeah, but we never get the case unless somebody's decided that prior to this that there was enough evidence, right?
I mean, fair point, John.
Yeah, so...
Well, I just believe, Your Honor, that there have been a number of people up to this point who have looked at all of the evidence objectively and decided that there is, in fact, there is enough evidence to support this verdict, and I would ask that the judges...
And we should defer to them.
Yes, Judge.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ask you a question.
Sure.
Is the determination that Mr. Johnson presented a prima facie case a conclusion of law?
So the board, let me just back up. Clark Construction was not aggrieved by the board's decision. The board found that his mental health conditions were not related. That was a finding of fact.
Okay, but sometimes you're the prevailing party in a case in Superior Court, but the other side appeals. And you want to say, but we should win anyway because they got this other question answered wrong. And we require a cross appeal if you want to do that. And that's, so I want to circle back and ask you, is it a legal conclusion when the board says Mr. Johnson has established a prima facie case?
I don't believe so. I think the legal conclusion it would be that Mr. Johnson is permanently totally disabled. That he met a prima facie case is just saying that there was sufficient evidence to at least make the bare minimum.
So why would the board go to the trouble of modifying the proposed decision to talk about that?
Well, I think the board, to be perfectly honest, I don't know why the board does any of what it does. But what I can say is that the proposed decision and order is completely irrelevant at this point, right? The board's decision is the board's decision.
If what the board decided is a question of law and counsel's right that you have to cross appeal a issue of law decided by the board adverse to your client, it might not be irrelevant.
Well, I don't think
that's why I'm asking you the questions I am.
Yeah, no, I get it. But Clark Construction was not aggrieved in any way by the board's decision. If the board had found that Mr. Johnson had mental health conditions related to his claim, and that on that basis there was some sort of permanent total disability, then absolutely Clark Construction should have appealed or cross-appealed and said...
To you a little more concrete. Okay. You know Mr. Johnson's appealed, and you want to make a motion to the trial court to dismiss before it ever goes to trial, as a matter of law, there's not sufficient evidence in this record to submit this question to the jury. Do you get to do that with, if you've left unchallenged the board's decision that there is enough evidence?
Well, in this case, so what we need to do is we can't divorce the mental health from the physical, right? Mr. Johnson had every right to appeal that he was permanently totally disabled.
Time's fleeting, and you need to answer Judge Leach's question.
Yeah, I'm trying. So he had every right to appeal that his physical conditions were permanently totally disabling on their own, right? So the mental health part of it is, it's either related or it's not. But then once it becomes related, it's intertwined with everything else.
The question is, what was your obligation, if any?
There was no obligation to appeal or cross-appeal because there was no adverse decision. There was no, the car construction was not aggrieved by anything in the board's determination.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank
that
you.
Concludes the session. We are in recess.